Hey, you. Want access to exclusive secret ops intel? Check out the link in the description.
It's easy to think about PowerPoint and slide decks as like a new thing, but in some ways, it's all the way back to like, you know, cave paintings and what have you, where we've kind of like been trying to visualize our thoughts and present like what we were thinking and ideas and stories. And just turns out that now we've gone from sort of cave paintings into the world of PowerPoint and Google Slides and whatever else.
Welcome to Secret Ops, the podcast uncovering the world of operations one episode at a time. I'm your host, Ariana Caffone, and today's guest is Morten Brunn, co-founder and CEO of FlashDocs, which is a company that is using AI to create data-driven content and visuals for slide decks. Now, we all have been there where we're like 40 slides into a slide deck thinking, what am I doing with my life? And Morten has also experienced that during his time at Google, McKinsey, as well as being a global operator at WorkSum. So FlashDocs is the magnum opus of trying to figure out how to solve that, not just for himself, but for all of us. So we dive into that journey, as well as a lot of other fantastic tidbits about what he's learned along the way as a founder. And this includes what it was like being nominated and being a part of the Forbes 30 Under 30 for finance. Let's jump in. Morten, thank you so much for coming on to Secret Ops. I am very excited to talk to you, not just because of your vast experience. There's a lot of things that we're going to get to nerd out about today, but I think you have my favorite bio that I've ever read. So with all of the guests that come on to Secret Ops, I ask for a bio to understand, you know, what things do they want to highlight? The first sentence of your bio says, Morten, for better and for worse, lived in slide decks for his entire career. And I think that most people feel that in their bones. Like, I had no idea when I went into the business world that my days would be spent in slide decks. Can you take us through the thread of working in slides in Google and sort of how that's threaded into what you're doing with FlashDocs today?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it sounds so depressing, I guess, when you sort of think about living a whole life in slide deck. But no, I mean, literally from like my first day as an intern at Google, my first sort of job that they gave me was to create 2,000 slides for a sort of classic internship project. And then like, you know, from Google into McKinsey to WorkSum and now FlashDocs, like, slide decks has just always been at the center of it. And I think it's an interesting sort of thing, right? Because, you know, I think I've been lucky and privileged to work with a lot of like talents and people, and whether it's awesome salespeople or operations people or CS folks or whatever it may be, super, super talented people across the board. But no matter like which role you're in, slides will end up becoming part of your job. It's part when you present to leadership or to clients or whatever. And if you don't do that part really well, I mean, you get capped out from being, you know, the world's best salesperson or the world's best CS manager or whatever it may be. So yeah, it's sort of been this interesting thing that always like has been sort of my thing, I guess, and something that I've just seen a lot of people struggle with, I guess, throughout my career. Yeah.
But we all have sort of that mind-numbing moment of like, I have been in a 30-page slide deck for a week now. What were some things that you saw along the way that were repeating problems that you essentially wanted to solve now with your current company that you've co-founded, FlashDocs? Like, what are the maybe three main problems that you were seeing through that repetitive work?
You know, it's easy to think about PowerPoint and slide decks as like a new thing, but in some ways, it's all the way back to like, you know, cave paintings and what have you, where we've kind of like been trying to visualize our thoughts and present like what we were thinking and ideas and stories. And it just turns out that now we've gone from sort of cave paintings into the world of PowerPoint and Google Slides and whatever else. So I think in some ways it's a very, very old concept. So I think the challenge that I think I've seen is that most people sort of feel like the slide decks ends up becoming the bottleneck. And one of the things that, to your point, people end up doing all over again and again is like kind of reinventing the wheel when you're creating a slide. Most other people probably at some point in their career have sat down and been like, let me just try to collect like a good sort of like library of different slides that I can reuse over and over again. Some companies even do it for their employees. And then you end up with like 300 slides. And instead of scrolling through 300 slides, you're like, nah, I'll just like created from scratch. So I think the interesting thing now with sort of AI coming onto the scene is that there are lots of these things that you can actually automate when it comes to, like, you know, finding the right layout to sort of communicate whatever it is that you want to communicate. And in many ways, that's what we do at FireStock. So, it's been sort of a fun journey from, I think, sort of having felt the pain as everyone else and wanted to sort of get away from slide decks. And now I've sort of put myself in a world where I probably will never get away from slide decks entirely.
Well, what I love about your journey too, so I think it's important when you are leading something that you've walked the walk, right? So like when I was in the supply chain world, I wanted to know how popcorn was made when I was, you know, managing a popcorn business. I wanted to know how code was created when I was in technology education. You know, I wanted to understand and have walked that path. And you walked that path as an intern at Google. You have walked that path in so many industries as well. So you've seen this problem consistently across all of these other things. Now, the match made in heaven is when the technology is at a point that you can solve the problems to the level that you know they can be solved. And AI has obviously, you know, taken over in the last 2 years as far as been a part of the conversation. But it's something that has been in the sort of technical space for quite a while. When did you have the light bulb moment of, oh, dang, I can solve these problems with AI and I'm going to do that? When did you think it was mature enough and easy enough to be able to implement within a business context to do?
I think for me, it sort of happened almost like twice. So the first time was when GPT came out, which I guess was sort of a light bulb moment for most people, when you could kind of like see that at least some of the text that we used to sort of like put into slides could maybe be automated and it could help you sort of like rationalize and think through what a good storyline for whatever it may be. So then as like a non-technical person, you sort of, you think, oh, this could be awesome. And then you don't really know what to do about it. So I think the second light bulb moment came when I started working with them. With my co-founder Adam on it. And I remember, like, I've been sort of, you know, really trying to stretch myself to see if I could build something very, very rudimental out myself and, you know, all those things. And then started chatting to Adam about it. And I was like, hey, man, like, I'm working on this thing. And he was intrigued by it. And he was like, look, let me try to take a stab and see what I can do. And then the next morning, he had something ready that just sort of blew my mind. So I was like, okay, holy shit, this is like, this is not just sort of automating text and doing those things. It can actually do a lot more. And he has a background in AI machine learning. So I think pairing up with someone with that skill set was a complete game changer for me.
Had you tried in previous companies or in previous roles to spin up something like a high fidelity version of what you were thinking of? Like, what did you come to him with and say, like, can we do this, but better?
I definitely had tried that. And probably as many listeners to this podcast within operations might sort of recognize this as well. So when I was in operations, one of the things that we did a lot of was like these reporting decks, and we did reporting internally into clients and whatnot. So I basically set up this thing where you could hook up a Google spreadsheet to a BigQuery database. So you can pull out data, and then you can use SQL or SQL to then query that data and then insert it into certain cells. And then when you have things in a cell in a spreadsheet, you can then tie those cells into a slide deck, which was really helpful. So you could have these decks where all the numbers would just update.
Oh my God. So hold up 1 second. Cause this is like a really super cool way. So you connected Google Sheets to an SQL database and then pulled that into a slide.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. It's not like so not you can, technical. And, that's decently technical.
Yeah, I guess so. It was a good start at least. And it was pretty fun to do. But I think you also get to sort of respect a lot, like how difficult then the actual problem is, because, and you know this from having done a ton of operational work and analysis as well, right? That it's so nice the first time that you do it. And then you present this slide deck of like all these numbers that have been updated. Then someone is going to say, oh, that is really, really interesting. I want to double click on this point. And you're like, shoot, now I like need to do this like deep dive thing on that. And like, then so we ended up having this huge deck with 100 different slides that needed updating every time. And even then it was still like, then I need to change around the storyline. And there's a summary as well that I need to manually go in and update. And we saw the same when we were doing client facing decks that then different industries wanted to report on different things, depending on how they used the product, they wanted to report on different sections as well. So it became this massive, like sort of decision tree of different options where you can sort of drill down, and instead of just having like 20 slides reporting deck, you had hundreds of slides and then needed to sort of pick and choose. So I think from that, I sort of started also respecting that the one thing is sort of getting the stuff on this slide. And that's what we've maybe been able to do for a while with normal sort of kind of technical things, but not really AI. And then with AI, we can also then say, here's a massive data set, or here's like a ton of different insights and text and numbers and whatnot from desperate resources. Tell me what's the interesting part of this data set. Then craft a story around it, find the right slides to communicate that story and populate those slides with numbers, charts, texts, what have you, right? So I think that's kind of what sort of, I think also gave me the light bulb moment of like, you know, this technology might actually end up taking us from something that we could do before that was kind of cool to something that's now like really cool.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I love it because I feel like everybody's story is like, my Google Sheet broke. All good operational stories. I feel like all of the problems that I've had to overcome in a complex way always started with the Google Sheet. Essentially, you did as much as you possibly could with the sheet or whatever it was. Mm. And then you sort of lost your mind and said, like, all right, there's got to be a better way. We've got to do this in a better way. Because I don't want to be up at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. like maintaining this thing that was supposed to make my life easier. Now, you come from an operational background. I mean, you come from an investment background, operational background. It's really a cool fusion of a lot of different interests. I want to touch base because you were a global operations lead, and this has been part of your DNA for quite some time. Now, you're originally from Denmark. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
And you're living in the States now. So you are truly a global human being. How has your operational mindset changed going from more regional to like from a specific country to a specific region to now doing like global businesses and globally operating? What changed in your way of thinking throughout each of those different stages in your career?
I think maybe like two stories sort of come to mind. Like one is like when I first moved to the US and I live in New York, so I moved to New York and to build up WorkSim. And we didn't have a ton. We were sort of like just trying to get, you know, the whole thing off the ground. So one of the first things that I did was I planned this lunch and learn event for people and we were in the future of workspace. So posted it on, I think, whatever meetup sort of platform at that point. And I ended up having like 50 people signing up and had booked like a huge conference room and ordered in sandwiches. And I was like, this thing is kind of like easy. You know, you throw something up on a platform, you have 50 people coming in. Probably some of them will end up being clients. This is great. I'll just do this for the next couple of years. So I'm in this massive like conference room with like, you know, a whole table just filled up with sandwiches and stuff. And I'm sitting there waiting and just waiting and no one comes.
Oh no.
And then after 15 minutes, this one sort of very, very sweet lady comes into this room and I'm like, are you here for the event? And she's like, well, I was actually just, I saw the sandwiches. So could I grab one of those? And I was like, oh man, this is like harder than I thought. So I think that was the first realization of like, look, when you try something from the ground up, and I don't necessarily think it's in, I probably even think a native, you know, New Yorker might sort of have the same experience, but when you're trying to get something off the ground, it's like hard, you know, work. It's really a lot. And you do meet a lot of like resistance and adversity in that journey. And you just kind of like have to power through and somehow have to maintain sanity and a somewhat like optimistic mindset and all of that. So I think that was kind of like the first story. I think the second story, maybe more to the point around like, you know, going from sort of a small country like Denmark into a huge country like the States. I think with WorkSim, I think I saw that, you know, we'd had quite some success both in Denmark and then subsequently in the UK and then moved into the US and there was part of me that just wanted to replicate the same formula. We'd been very fortunate to find some super talented folks in the UK who knew the market and could help us like land the first couple of clients. And then I think going to the US, one thing that we just saw quite quickly is just because of the size of the market and you know, the scale of things, finding those like few individuals who could really like unlock enterprise deals or whatever, it's literally like a needle in the haystack, right? So I think that was when I started really getting into operations because it really, it became so abundantly clear that trying to like throw stuff on the wall and do a meetup and whatever here and there would become just way too fragmented and way too uncertain. And we needed something that was much more scalable and repeatable and had much more structure to it. So I think I almost want to credit that whole experience. You know, that's why I ended up doing operations, just because that was like the one tool in the toolbox that actually might be able to solve that problem of like going from small market into like huge market, really.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I find I'm from the US and I find it absolutely exhausting to do business here, because in one country you have all of the country's approach to things, but each state is its own jurisdiction. And then you have regions on top of that, that if you're trying to unlock distributors or if you're trying to unlock deals, all those pieces have to come together. And you're right. It is like finding a needle in a haystack. And a lot of it is relationship based. And the interesting part is we met at a meetup over, I think, cookies. And I knew that you were cool because you liked cookies. It's interesting for me because I that was like one of the rare meetups that I go to. I would say I'm more like of an introvert, even though I seem quite extroverted. I feel like as operators, if we can be better at communicating and connecting, then we have a stronger way of growing together. So, you know, what are some things that you've learned in your process of meeting people and growing your business and also being an operator that are some tips that, again, like we can take into our lives?
Whenever I go into a networking event, the worst part of it is the 5 minutes before I step into it, because I have that small window of like, I can still back out of this thing.
Okay, I'm so glad it's not just me. I have to pep talk myself every time. Like, you got this, girl. You got this.
Yeah, exactly. But that's it. I do the same pep talk, that I remind myself that they have cookies up there, and then I'm off to the races. No, but I think there. I don't know if anyone. I guess there are people that really sort of are just naturally drawn to those things, but it doesn't come naturally for me either. I guess is the point. I think for me, like, the networking component is something where you have to do it when you don't need it. You know, when you first start networking, when you actually need to utilize your network, like if you become a founder and then you're like, oh, I better go out and network and try to see if I can get some money, then I think it's going to be really hard, because you come into it with like too much of like a angle and too much of something that you want to get out of it. It's almost something that you have to invest into it, and then you just have to trust that it will pay itself back over time. And I think the good thing is that, you know, your career is like, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? And you will probably have many careers and many jobs, and at some point you're an employee, then you're a founder, then maybe you're an investor or an advisor or operator and non-operator and whatever. You'll end up switching through all these roles. So chances are that like at some point somewhere you bumped into someone who actually ends up becoming useful in whatever you're doing next. There's a ton of the people that have been, you know, extremely helpful just in the last 6 months of building FlashDucks, that, you know, I didn't have a ton to sort of do with when I was at Worksum. And there are also a lot of people that I met at Worksum where like now those like circles doesn't connect, or they connect in a different way. And like, so you never know with these things. I think it's completely random. I just do think that you have to kind of like invest into it when you don't need it, and then trust that it will pay itself back. And then don't feel, you know, that you're the only one sort of dreading going into a network event. Just show up, sort of try to have at least 3 conversations. And then if you still don't feel like it, then you can leave and it's been a success. And if you actually end up liking being there and love talking to the folks there, then, you know, then continue and onwards. I think those are probably like my best advice for it.
Oh, I feel like you're in my head, because I think after our conversation, you were my 3rd conversation and then I was out. because I think you're totally right. I think networking is probably the, like, not the right word, because it puts this like weird, we must connect thing. It's really about humans talking to other humans about like what's going on in your life. Right. But it really is just about showing up. Like, if you aren't showing up, if you aren't making new friends, I remember when I was a kid, my dad's, he gave me the advice of always keep making new friends, because the older you get, the harder it is to make new friends. And I didn't realize that. Because when you're in school, you got this built-in thing. But as an adult, you get absorbed into your life. And then you forget that you need to keep making new friendships and relationships. And it's really fulfilling. So thanks, Dad. So going to your education really quick. So you went and got a master's from the London School of Economics and Political Science. And I wanted to ask you, because I think a lot of people listening have the debate of, do I go back and get more education for a specialized part of what I want to be doing? And you did that. What would you say for other people that might be making that decision for themselves? Like, what are some things to think about?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think like one thing that made it easier for me to sort of make that decision was that for me, it was actually the hard thing when I didn't do my, you know, my master's after doing undergrad, because in Denmark is that's a common thing to do. I think the stats is something like 85% of people who do undergrad do master's right after.
Wow. So
you just do, you know, the full thing in one go. So I only sort of, I ended up dropping out of my master's program because I got the job offer from Google. But I think the reason why I came back to it, aside from feeling that, you know, this was always something that I kind of like have to do, I guess, was that, you know, I think just working those couple of years gave me a lot of perspective on sort of the stuff that you learn in school. What does that look like when you actually apply it? And there are things that I, for instance, I didn't like finance at all. I flunked my first accounting exam and had to retake it. And yeah, it was a whole thing. I just couldn't see why I needed to do it if I wasn't going to be an accountant. And then you go out to like your professional life, and then all of a sudden you sort of realize that, you know, if you're in marketing or sales, you will talk about ROI and payback times and profits. And, you know, it's sort of, it's almost like the language of business in so many ways. And if you want to go into investing or whatever, you got to be able to read, you know, a balance sheet and all those things. So all of a sudden coming back into school, I all of a sudden felt that there are all these courses that I squandered in my undergraduate that now I was like incredibly excited to go back and learn. And then learn it together with other people who had sort of gone and done the same, but had different experience that I could also learn from. So I think just a sort of mosaic of like different people that you're with, and you're at sort of completely different type of motivation than what you had in your undergrad, I think was a complete game changer for me. So I would definitely recommend it. And I think it does give you a very different type of fuel going into something like that you actually know what is the stuff that that's going to be really useful for me, and how can I apply it? And if I had known this, then I would have been better at doing that. And like, that was a complete game changer.
Once you have that experience and you can connect the dots in that real world way, that education or that master's is lifted even more so, which is really interesting.
It's so true. It's like, what isn't it a Mike Tyson quote that everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face? And I think that's probably the same becoming a parent, or like probably having your first job where you're like, you know, you've learned all these things in school and you know like how things should be or what it ought to be. But then when you actually get into the real world, you have to deal with people or a kid or like whatever else. And it gives you a different perspective on things. So yeah.
Yeah. That first job is the punch in the face for sure.
It is.
Well, I did want to wrap up with one last question, because so you were in the financial 30 under 30 for your work with Matter. And I wanted to bring that up because I think a lot of people from the outside look at 30 under 30 and we're like, oh, that's so interesting. And we want to ask questions, but we don't ever get the opportunity to. So I wanted to ask you, since I have the opportunity, you know, what was it like being on that list? Did it change your perspective about anything? Was it a happy surprise? Like, how did that all come to be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a very happy surprise. And but actually for me, it was truly a surprise, because like I had a coworker at Google at the time who is a great guy named Nicholas, who was super supportive of me and my career. And he was like, look, I think you're doing some awesome stuff with Matter and with Google and London School of Economics. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to nominate you for Forbes Under 30. And I was a little bit like, look, whatever way you want to waste your time, like be my guest, but I'm not going to make the list. Right. So like, it's fine. And, then I didn't hear back from them until they sent me an invite to go to the sort of, big award ceremony in London where they did the award. And I was like, look, I'm not going to buy a plane ticket to London and a hotel to go to an event to find out that I didn't make it on the list. I'll be surrounded with all these brilliant people and I'll be the one guy who didn't make the list. No way. So, so instead I was on a business trip to Dublin. So I was sitting alone in a hotel room when all of a sudden, like I got a notification that I made the list. So it was truly a surprise, and I still regret missing that party. because that would have been fun. But no, so it was truly a surprise. And then afterwards, it was just a really cool experience. You get to be part of the community. I went to Tel Aviv to meet with the other people on the list, made lots of good friends there. So that was really, really interesting. But I mean, I also think with some of these things, like, it changes stuff, but it also really doesn't change that much, because I'm really, you know, I'm forever grateful that I got nominated, and very humbled that I ended up, you know, being on the list as well. But at the end of the day, like, you know, you go on with your life, and you have to do your job the next Monday and show up and do your thing, and that's it. So I think, if anything, it was more motivation for, like, you know, whatever I was doing at the time was probably not all that crazy, and just continue sort of, you know, doing your best and apply yourself, and then you're fine. So it changes things, but also it doesn't change that much. So
I feel like it's one of those things too. You know, my husband, we talk about getting awards or accolades. It's like a weird thing where there's this gravitas to it, but then you sort of are yourself. You are who you are, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You're still slogging along, or in that room putting sandwiches out for nobody to come. You know, like, you're still that person that has tried many times to, like, keep moving their path forward. And that's all what it comes down to, is like, celebrate those moments. But then you got to, like, keep on keeping on, I think is what they say.
True.
Anyway, I want to wrap up with some rapid fire questions to learn more about you as a human being, even though I feel like we got, you know, some good tidbits of your humanness throughout the chat. So the first question is, what is your favorite part of the day?
Waking up to feedback from clients. Yeah, we're very lucky to have European clients. So every morning I have, like, a big list of feedback, and that's my favorite part of the day.
I love that. Spoken like a true founder. What book are you currently reading, or what audiobook are you listening to?
I am listening to a book about Charlie Munger called Poor Charlie's Almanac, and it's really good.
Yeah. All right, I'll check it out. What is the best purchase that you've made under $50? That's the hard part.
Wow. Coffee this morning.
Ooh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. What is something that makes you little kid happy outside of work?
I mean, spending time with friends and family and my wife is probably that. But if something maybe a little bit more sort of more original, I guess. I'm very fortunate that I have access to a pool in New York, and I'm a big water guy. And being very, very far from water that you can swim in, unless you want to jump in the East River, makes me insanely happy every time that I go there. So yeah, I'll probably say that.
That's so fun. Yeah. What is the most important lesson that you've learned so far in your life?
I think when I was at McKinsey, I thought that they were gonna unveil this, like, secret formula or magic trick or some patented whatever. And I think what I found out there was that the real trick behind a place like McKinsey is, you know, smart people working very, very hard. So there's almost not the problem that you can't solve by just applying yourself to it for hours. And then at some point you'll end up cracking it. So if you're ever faced with a daunting question or a daunting problem, I would encourage everyone to have some confidence in themselves and just keep working at it. Then at some point the problem will crack.
I feel like that should be like my, like, little recording mantra daily, which is like, you got this.
yeah, exactly.
The last one is, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I heard this, I think it was like a quote from Kobe Bryant at some point that was like, my biggest idol is my future self or something. And maybe it's a little bit tacky, but I think I think it's good having a milestone of always becoming a little bit better. So I think what I want to be when I grow up is just a better version of myself. And I think staying true to yourself and try to become better every day is probably the most meaningful thing that you can spend your life doing. So I hope to become a better version of myself when I grow up, I guess.
Me too. Me too. That's the goal. That's the goal here. You are such a joy. Thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge. I feel like you dropped so many little nuggets of just, you know, we got to create like a little wisdom, a list of things that you just said. But if people are listening and they want to see what you're doing, or they want to check up on Flash Docs, where should we point them to?
I mean, I love connecting with folks on LinkedIn. So anyone who wants to connect, feel free to just throw me a connection invite. The secret is that I do accept all of them, so don't just invite out. I'll make sure to accept, and then I'll respond to all messages. I do that as well. So definitely reach out. I'm always down to connecting with great folks. And thank you so much for inviting me. This has been an absolute joy, and love being the wandering fortune cookie here, and then throw some advice out there. I hope it's helpful, but it's been a ton of fun.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening to Secret Ops. Make sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcast, or check us out on YouTube, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Hey, listener. Do you want to be a top operator in business and in life? Well, we at Secret Ops are here to help you do just that. Check out our monthly Secret Ops newsletter with exclusive intel just for you. From bonus content to secret resources, we've given you the VIP access. To sign up, check out the link in the description. And as always, thanks for listening.